Hello, this is Ian with the commercial news, dated Wednesday, September 2nd, 2020. We'll start our reading today on the front page of the paper. Today, with the article, "Council Hears About Another SAFER Grant," by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. The city hired six firefighters under a Staffing for Adequate Fire and Emergency Response, or SAFER, grant about a year and a half ago, and is now looking to retain those six with another grant and possibly receive funding for others hired and add one more firefighter. Danville Fire Chief Don McMasters told the Danville City Council Tuesday night the grant program will be reopened again in the next few months, and there have been changes to reduce financial burdens on applications due to COVID-19. McMaster said there will be waivers to retain or rehire firefighters facing layoffs, with 100% of the funding coming from the grant. "We can apply to retain our six firefighters hired a year ago due to the current situation," McMaster said, adding that the grant would be for another 3 years, and they could potentially also seek funding to retain the additional firefighters hired, since those six to maintain shift numbers. He said a determination will have to be made how much the fire department applies for. He said the fire department also is down one person for 15 firefighters per shift. The department has 44 firefighters with 14 on one shift. "This is a significant thing to us," McMaster said about the grant funding, and added if the city would not get awarded the grant, it costs the city nothing. At the end of the 3-year grant, he added, the city is not required to keep the firefighters. Ward 3 Alderwoman Sharon Pickering said she thinks the city should go forward with it. Other aldermen agreed. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said this would help the city financially, possibly up to $1 million per year. "It's certainly worth throwing our hat in the ring for," he said. Aldermen also talked about firefighter overtime, which totaled more than $32,717 during a 2-week period last month. McMaster said there's been a perfect storm the last 2 months for more increased fire department overtime. One firefighter was quarantined for 14 days and another for 10 days due to the coronavirus. One has been off duty due to an on-duty injury. Two are on short-term workers' compensation, and they had 13 working fires in August, which saw about $1,000 in overtime per fire. Ward 1 Alderman Robert Williams also asked about the necessity of firefighters responding to most medical calls in addition to ambulance services. Mayor Williams said the question has continued to come up during the years, and a lot of time, firefighters can be on a scene more quickly and offer assistance. Other aldermen agreed that minutes count and they appreciate the help of the emergency scenes. In other business, the council also approved accepting a $363,375 assistance to firefighters grant and authorizing the amendment of the fiscal year 2020-2021 fire division budget. The grant is for purchasing 14 self-contained breathing apparatus for firefighters and other equipment. There is no city funding match. Staying on the front page, we'll next go to the article, "Mall Cinema Reopens Thursday," by Jennifer Bailey, Danville. Following the reopening of other movie theaters across the country, the AMC Classic Village Mall 6 in Danville will reopen Thursday. Tenet, showing on multiple screens, and Unhinged are the two movies listed as the first showings when the Danville Theater reopens. The New Mutants then opens on Friday. An AMC press release stated, "AMC is delighted to announce that movies are coming back to the big screen at select AMC theaters in your area beginning Thursday, September 3rd, as part of the third phase of our reopening plan." AMC started reopening theaters in August. About 300 locations have already reopened nationwide, With AMC projecting their 140 additional locations will be reopening this week. AMC planned to open about 70% of its more than 600 U.S. theater locations in time for the September 3rd release of Warner Brothers' Tenet. The remainder of AMC's U.S. theaters will open only after authorized to do so by state and local officials. According to AMC theaters, auditoriums are at 40% capacity or less to allow for social distancing. Full capacity could come around year's end. Masks are required before, during, and after the movie, unless the patron is enjoying food and drinks. There are also other safety and cleaning policies in place. AMC is celebrating 100 years in business. We are grateful for the positive feedback we have been receiving about our guests' desire to see movies on the big screen at AMC, and about our extensive AMC safe and clean policies and procedures. Our comprehensive commitment to operating our theaters safely now includes social distancing through limiting ticket sales and automatic seat blocking, seamless contactless ticketing, greatly enhanced cleaning procedures, the availability of hand sanitizer and disinfecting wipes throughout our theaters, as well as a mandatory mask policy for all guests and crew members, said Adam Aron, CEO and president of AMC Theaters, in a press release. Aron stated the first two weekends of operations have exceeded their expectations in terms of guests returning to the movies and feedback about AMC's safe and clean policies and procedures. Guests returning to AMC can do so knowing that we've been in contact and constant dialogue with top scientists and experts in public health and cleaning about how to best reopen our theaters in ways that will be responsible and welcoming, Aron stated. According to Cinnamon Keith, property manager of the Village Mall, there will be many deals at the reopened Danville Movie Theater. More information can be found at amctheaters.com. Keith also reports that all stores have reopened at the Village Mall. Stores differ in their operating hours. There will remain no mall walking until 2021. She says when mall walking starts back, it will only be allowed during mall hours, no early walking. Mall officials are also working on marketing for the upcoming holidays. And now, finishing out the articles on the front page, we'll go to the article, Thrilling Numbers, Bureau Reports Another Banner Tourism Year, by Jennifer Bailey. Tourism and those traveling to this area haven't been the same this year due to the coronavirus pandemic and events being canceled. However, local officials are thrilled at seeing another banner year in 2019 tourism economic impact study numbers. The Danville Area Convention and Visitors Bureau on Tuesday released the results of an economic impact study prepared for the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity and its Bureau of Tourism by the U.S. Travel Association for 2019. Spending by non-residents in Danville and Vermilion County was reported at $89.66 million, a 6.8% increase from 2018. We have seen a significant increase in every category, Cook said. Employment is up 4.1%, local payroll is up 8.3%, at $17.26 million, and local tax receipts are up 7.9% at $2.18 million, she said. Since the start of the state's Certified Convention and Visitors Bureau program in 1984, tourism has provided a steady source of income for Danville and Vermilion County, Cook said. The return on investment, however, represents much more than money in the bank. It is first-time jobs and careers at all levels. It's entrepreneurial spirit at its best. It's capital investment and taxes. It's quality of life, preservation, revitalization, and sharing the celebration of our sense of place with others. She continued, the U.S. Travel Association study is done for each of the 102 counties in Illinois, and is the only independent study done yearly over an extended number of years using the same model. So we have a fair growth comparison, an excellent year-by-year benchmark. 2019's numerous local events included balloons over Vermilion, thunder on the Vermilion speedboat races, and the reopening of the Fisher Theater. The Fisher's Jason Rome has said that the theater's events provide entertainment and exposure to the arts for area residents, a draw for tourism, and the overall economic development of the downtown Danville area, as well as generating funds for additional needed equipment and ongoing improvements to the building. The Fisher Theater reopened on September 21, 2019. In addition, people visit the area for work and training, sports events, family and school reunions, and to visit the local restaurants, shops, and other attractions. We'll now go to the death notices. Carl G. Young, 89, of Danville, passed away on Thursday, August 20th. A graveside service for Carl Young will be held at 10 a.m. on Friday, September 4th, at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. John G. Gilby Nelk, 58, of Westville, passed away on Friday, August 28th. Funeral services will be 12 noon on Tuesday, September 1st, at Robinson Chapel in Catlin. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to noon on Tuesday at the funeral home. Memorials may be made to the Multiple Sclerosis Foundation. D. Joanne Kramer, 93, of Bentonville, Arkansas, and formerly of Danville, passed away on August 27, 2020. A prayer service will be held at 3:30 p.m. on Wednesday, September 2nd, at Kruger Cohn Pape Funeral Home in Danville. Visitation will follow from 4 to 6 p.m. A private family mass and burial will be held at a later date. Ada Marie Snook, 96, of Westville, passed away on Saturday, August 29th. A celebration of Ada's life will be held at noon on Saturday, September 5th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Westville. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to noon on Saturday prior to her service at the funeral home. Memorial donations may be given in her name to the American Lung Association or St. Jude's Children's Hospitals. Pamela Sue Kelly, 57, of Danville, passed away on August 26th. Private family services will be at a later date, with interment in St. Wilfred Cemetery in Woonsocket, South Dakota. Memorials can be made to CARA of Tilton, Illinois. Barbara Jane Forbes Stover of Danville, Illinois, passed away on Thursday, August 2nd. She will be interred with her husband at the National Cemetery in Danville, Illinois. Her family requests in lieu of flowers that memorial donations be made to the Stover Family Scholarship Fund through the DACC Foundation, to the Danville Public Library, or the Vermilion County Museum. Patty A. Walker, 63, of Rural Downs, passed away on Saturday, August 29th. A private family burial was held at Friends Cemetery in Bentown. According to Patty's wishes, there will be no public services. Memorials may be directed to Whitney's Walk for Life at whitneyswalk.com. Norma Marie Tavbau, 77, of Danville, passed away on August 27th. A celebration of life will be held on Thursday, September 3rd at 10 a.m. at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville, Illinois. Burial will be in Resurrection Cemetery. Visitation will be held on Wednesday, September 2nd from 5 to 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Memorials may be made to Holy Family Catholic Church or Second Church of Christ. Emily Jean Alexander, 84, formerly of Westville and Paris, passed away on Saturday, August 29th. Private family visitation will be held at Robeson Chapel in Catlin. Public graveside rites will be at 11:30 a.m. on Friday, September 4th at Gundy Cemetery near Bismarck. An informal celebration of life will be hosted by the family from 4 to 7 p.m. on Sunday, September 6th at Willow Barn in Danville, Illinois. Memorials in her memory to the Brett Eldridge Family Foundation. Patricia Flo Reed Savage, 75, of Williamsport, Indiana, passed away on Sunday, August 30th. A visitation will be held on Thursday, September 3rd, from 5 to 8 p.m. at Grady Funeral Home in Williamsport. Funeral services will be at Grady Funeral Home on Friday, September 4th at 11 a.m. Interment will follow at Mann's Chapel in Rossville, Illinois. Memorial contributions may be made to the family per their wishes. Louise Ann Knapp, 81, of Danville, passed away on August 28th. Private family services will be held at a later date. Sherry Place, 68, of Montezuma, Indiana, passed away on Monday, August 24th. There is no visitation or services. Michael S. Holmes, 64, of Westville, passed away on Sunday, August 30th. A visitation will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. on Thursday, September 3rd, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Westville. A private family graveside service will be held at Resurrection Cemetery in Danville. Memorial donations may be given in his name to the American Cancer Society. Margaret Artman of Seidel passed away on August 29th. There will be no visitation. Graveside services will be at 10:30 a.m. on September 2nd at the Fairview Cemetery near Seidel. Hugh Estill Dick Coakley, 94, of Belton, died on Thursday, August 6th, 2020. Expressions of sympathy may take the form of contributions to Hospice of Western Kentucky. Now for some sports news, we'll go to the article, Charitable Rivalry, Mustangs, Trojans Raise Funds in McTaggart Match, by Chad Dare, Petersburg, Indiana. Dealing with adversity and changes has been a constant theme this year in athletics. The annual McTaggart Memorial Tournament, which is normally played during the summer at Fountain Central High School, was canceled this year because of the coronavirus pandemic. Fountain Central tennis coaches Chris Webb and David Knight explored the option of hosting a McTaggart match this season. "We started the McTaggart Memorial Tournament back in 2007 as Evan McTaggart passed away in an accident in 2004, and Levi lost his life in an accident in 2007, said Webb of the former tennis players at Fountain Central. "Besides the Fountain Central kids that have played, there has also been a lot of Covington kids that have played in the tournament. It just seemed natural to turn our match with Covington into the McTaggart match. Each team sold special t-shirts to honor Evan and Levi. Fountain Central players wore the orange shirts with light blue lettering, while Covington players won light blue shirts with orange lettering. Orange was Evan's favorite color, and we wore orange wristbands to honor him after his death. And Levi's favorite color was light blue," said Webb. Covington coach Terry Fields admitted that the Trojans were pleased to be part of the match. "Evan and Levi were two good kids that were hard workers and good tennis players," Field said. "Being only 7 miles apart, I know that a lot of our kids know their kids, and it's very natural for Covington kids to play in the tournament every summer. It makes the most sense that we would be a part of this match. There was only one small problem on Tuesday. Mother Nature didn't cooperate. After a little over 45 minutes of action, the contest had to be halted because of rain, with Fountain Central leading in 4 of the 5 matches. I was really pleased with the way that we were playing," said Webb, whose team had won 30 of 41 games in the match when it was halted. Carson Eberle and Cody Linville, Brent Myers, along with the number 2 doubles team of Sawyer Keeling and Brian Pickett, were all up a set. The lone match where Covington was leading was at number one doubles, as the team of Miles Potter and Nolan Potter had a 5-2 lead. I even think our number one doubles team of Jacob Keeling and CJ Yeager were playing well, Webb said. It was just the little things that had them down in that match. Hopefully we can make the corrections when we resume the match. The Potter brothers came into Tuesday's match undefeated, as they have won titles at West Vigo and Western Boone this season. They had a good year last year, including being on all-conference, Field said. I think they learned to play together last year, which isn't always easy for brothers, and they have improved. That's something Field is seeing from his entire team, which doesn't have a senior, and they are currently playing without Calvin Springer because of a hamstring injury. We have a lot of 3-2 matches where it's come down to the final match of the night, Field said. I like the way this group battles. Covington is 6-3 this season and 1-0 in the Wabash River Conference, while Fountain Central is 4-0, and Tuesday was the conference opener for the Mustangs. We are scheduled to play 6 times this week and 3 times next week, so this is the heart of our season, Webb said. But with our current situation, you never know if you are going to get all of those matches played. As for Tuesday's postponement, both schools were hopeful to get the match completed sometime this week. According to Webb, the proceeds from the McTaggart match currently stand around $2,000 and will be split between the Evan McTaggart Scholarship Fund and the Levi McTaggart Trust Fund. Now over at the local section, we'll go to the article, Virus Deaths, Rate Spike Amid Low Reported Testing Output, from Jerry Nowicki at the Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. The number of COVID-19-related deaths and the single-day test positivity rate spiked Tuesday as the Illinois Department of Public Health announced an abnormally small number of test results over the previous 24 hours. The health department reported 39 deaths related to the virus, the highest single-day total since June 26th. The rolling 7-day average positivity rate increased to 4.3%, as the state reported 1,492 new confirmed cases among 22,961 test results reported in the previous 24 hours. The testing output was the lowest reporting in one day since July 6th. Because of the low testing output, the single-day virus positivity rate was 6.5%, which is the highest one-day rate since June 2nd. In response to questions regarding the low testing output, an IDPH spokesperson said, "We reached the maximum capacity of our system and currently are in the process of expanding this. That work is underway now." And continuing with Vermilion County information, Doug Toole of the Vermilion County Health Department confirmed Tuesday 6 new cases, one in their 20s, 3 teens, and 2 preschoolers. That brings our total number of positive cases to 336. 2 of the new cases are family-related to previously reported positive cases. We are also reporting our 4th COVID-related death, a 68-year-old male who had been hospitalized for the past week. The next article is GNC Diagnostic to Open in Hoopston, from Carol Hicks, Hoopston. GNC Diagnostic at 220 Bank Street will be open for business Monday, September 14th at 6 a.m. under the leadership of Elizabeth Bitsy Johnson, RN BSN, and Chelsea Weinard, PBT CNA. The pair saw a need and decided to address it with a less expensive way to obtain blood draws and other lab work. "So many people needed it, that's why we did it," Goodrum said, explaining that several friends had no insurance or such high deductibles that it made it difficult for them. Goodrum went on to explain that coworkers' schedules did not always allow them time for their own lab work to be done, so GNC Diagnostics would be here for them. Hours will be 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, but added, if they see a need, they will open on Wednesday. The pair started planning the lab in 2019, with the objective to offer the community a more cost-effective option for lab work. The building was first on the list of items to acquire. When the building at 220 Bank Street was found at a reasonable price, they grabbed it and began the work of rehabbing it. The building was totally gutted from the roof down, Weinard said, and with the help of really supportive families, did all the work themselves, physically and financially. Both ladies said they had construction families that helped them tremendously with the rehab, and they were extremely grateful for the support. One of the hardest parts of the work was accomplished on the building. The next step was to acquire an overseer, a medical doctor, to sign on as the medical director, which was required to open the lab. That was accomplished when Terrell Applewhite, MD of Bourbonnais, agreed to be the medical director. His responsibilities are to oversee the draw site and provide clinical guidance when the ordering physician cannot be reached. He stated to Goodrum and Weinard, "I will do anything to help the community." Applewhite comes to Heritage Health to provide health care to patients at the facility, according to Goodrum. Once a physician's order for lab work is presented to GNC Diagnostics, lab work is obtained, and a croupier from Quest Laboratory will pick up the samples and transport them to a CLIA-certified Quest Laboratory in Wooddale near O'Hare for processing. The turnaround could be ready as early as the next morning, or a 24 to 48 turnaround. Anything that cannot be processed at Wooddale is sent to Quest's specialized lab in Chantilly, Virginia, or San Juan Capistrano, California. Results are delivered through an online portal called Quantum, which can be printed or saved as a PDF to send to the patient and ordering physician. Goodrum added they do not do any emergency labs. Both women work at Autumn Fields, but have given notice to work full-time at the lab. Bitsy, the daughter of Jim and Linda Goodrum, has worked in nursing for 24 years. She is married to Tom Johnson and has two children, Jesse Dustin Pentecost and Laura Johnson, a Hoopston High School senior, and has one granddaughter, Fallon. Chelsea, married to Kelly Morganson, has been a CNA for 9 years and a phlebotomist for 1 year. The pair have just several fur babies, according to Weinard. "We want to thank our families for their support," said Goodrum and Weinard, "and the city of Hoopston. It's a nice place to have such a supportive community." And with that, that's about all the time we have for today's reading. This has been Ian with the commercial news, dated Wednesday, September 2nd, 2020. Thanks for joining me today, and as always, please stay safe.